Splendid. Now, a wee while back, we were delighted to feature the wonderful and amazing founder of the One Brand and One Difference and so on. That would be Duncan Goose. And yes, our prayers have been answered. Duncan is back with us again to talk about the way in which global water issues and more can be addressed. Duncan Goose, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you, sir?
Thank you very much. Great to be back.
Well, it's more than that. I mean, let's face it, we were prompted into the whole scenario because we got a fabulous box, which I'm holding in my hand now, which has got life-changing water written upon itself. Quick introductions, by the way, Duncan. In the studio, we have two fabulous fine folk, Midweek Drive's Kenna Zarebski and Catherine Morton. And Kenna, you've just realised you've already availed yourself of this fabulous product.
Yes, I bought the bottle a couple of weeks ago and I've been using it and I've just noticed today, I'm drinking the One Water.
And we thought
Thank you very much.
The only thing we can actually do is to officially open, because I've had to hold back so many folk in this particular thing. I thought, no, Duncan's coming on the show, let's hold it back. And as we say, when you drink one, the world drinks two. Just juice, spring water, a dash of natural flavouring and no added sugar. That's the refreshing recipe for helping fund clean drinking water in the world's poorest communities. I'll pass this over to the girls. I'm like, Catherine, have you ever availed yourself of the One Magic?
I have had a bottle of One Water.
Right. Well, we're going to have a tasting on air, if that's all right, Duncan. So we've got the cups.
No pressure then.
Good. Oh, we might hear thing being poured out by the microphone. Marvellous, yeah. That's good. That's good. So we get the three deliveries there. I know this is going to be absolutely wonderful, Duncan. I mean, so it's great stuff there. But share with us some of the fantastic things that you've been doing with the company and give us a bit of backstory in terms of how you came up with the idea in the first place.
Sure. Well, the One Brand started in 2005. We were the official water brand for Live 8 and Make Poverty History. So day one, we were on stage globally televised in the hands of Brad Pitt, which wasn't a bad way to start. But the unique thing about One Water is that we give away all the money that we make from selling it. And so far, we've given away over £14 million and provided clean water to over 3 million people in 14 African countries. So it's a really simple proposition. It's when you buy a bottle of water or our new juiced water, we give away all the money we make, and that changes somebody's life in the developing world.
Which, in a world in which we sometimes turn around, we've spent the first part of the programme obviously reflecting on the political shenanigans and things that have been going on and impacting people. I mean, it's really wonderful that this makes a difference. I'm going to take a sip now of the actual thing, so just bear with me whilst Kenna puts another question to you. So,
being the founder, what do you actually do to ensure that the work the foundation does is getting across to people? So I didn't actually know that much about it myself, which isn't good, until more recently. So what would you actions do you take in ensuring people understand the work you do and where the money goes and what buying a bottle of One Water can actually do?
So a couple of things. Firstly, on every single bottle, there is an explanation on the bottle about the fact we give away all the money. And we try and keep a running total on the bottles. I think probably the one you've got says £12 million given away on it. But actually, we're up to £14 million. And we keep having to update the labels every time we add another million to it. We try and change that. So we're kind of hopeful that people will actually take the time to read the label. Obviously, that's not, you know, an ideal thing, because people have got busy lives and how many people sort of read the backs of labels. But what we also have is a massive following on social media. So we have over 250,000 people that follow us on Facebook. We've got about another 10, 20,000 on Twitter and Instagram and things like that. So we're very much reliant on people spreading the word of what we do, which is why, you know, having Alex call me up and say, do you want to come on the show, is fantastic. But I think the best thing that we can hope for is just that people really understand that when you buy our water rather than another brand, what you're actually doing is giving somebody in a developing country a better shot at life. So it means that kids aren't walking for 4 or 5 hours a day to collect water. They've actually got an opportunity to go to school. And we think those kind of messages resonate really strongly with people. And I think that kind of almost slightly underground way of getting marketing messages out is really helpful for us, because I'd much rather have somebody that's an advocate talk to some of their friends or family about what we do, rather than us going to spend thousands or, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of pounds putting a billboard up somewhere. I'd rather that money went to clean water projects in Africa.
Mm. Catherine.
If I remember correctly, you want to get to 20 million by 2020, so I'm definitely going to be more conscious when picking up a bottle of water. But other than letting people talk to their families about the projects, is there any way that you can guarantee that goal by 2020?
That's something that we set out to do, and we're, like I said, we're at 14 million, and the projections that we have are that we will get to 20 million. I think the big challenge for us is, as you say, it's difficult. There's always that dilemma about, you know, do you invest £1 million in advertising the brand, or do you invest £1 million in changing people's lives? Mm-hmm. And our view has always been we would rather change people's lives with the money that we make rather than keep investing it in marketing messages. So I'm pretty confident that we're going to get to 20 million. But what I really hope is that actually people will, you know, go out and they will see us in places like Starbucks or Holland & Barrett or every airport in the UK in duty free, and they'll go, actually, that's the brand of water that I should be buying. Or if they run a shop or a restaurant or a deli, or, you know, anywhere that stocks water, doesn't matter whether you're a school, uni, you know, anything, that they say, actually, this is a conscious decision. This is the brand that we would rather have in our, you know, environment, our business, or whatever, because we know it's doing good. And I think that's really what we're hoping that people will do, and just say, do you know what, water is water, but this is one that's going to change somebody's life.
I've got to say, the taste is fantastic. I thought it was delicious. What did you make of it, Catherine?
It was lovely. I have had the water before, but not the juice water, and with this one's raspberry and apple, and it's really nice. I love it.
10 out of 10 for me. And Kenna?
Yeah, same for me. Me and Catherine took a sip at the same time, and then we looked at each other and went, ooh.
it's you. Because, I mean, it's a good health aspect as well. I mean, we hear a great deal about the health importance of water and aspects of that, and certainly with respect to sugar tax and all of that malarkey that's actually there. I've often said you can't keep a Ferrari and actually pour sugared water into it and expect it to actually work well. So it actually does you good as well.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's really great about this is we spent a couple of years figuring out how to develop a product that actually most of the people in the business are family people, and we've all got young kids, and what we wanted to do was develop a product that we would actually feel comfortable with our kids drinking, because there are so many sugar-laden drinks that exist on the market, you know, and these are, you know, I'm not going to name the brands, but some
I'm glad
of
you said that, Doug. I think we know what we are. The Make You Burp company, the Fizzy Pop Pump company, and so on. Yes, exactly.
You know, and these brands, you know, in fact, there was a survey that was done, and I think they surveyed, they found that something like 79 or 80% of the brands that were available that had added sugar had more than 6 or 7 teaspoons in them of sugar, and some of the bigger offenders, the ones that you kind of mentioned, that you know, they're like 11, 12, 13 tablespoons of sugar and teaspoons of sugar in these things, which is just nuts. But the challenge is that everybody's become very accustomed to drinking very sugary, sweet drinks. So if you give them an alternative that isn't that, suddenly they're going, well, that doesn't kind of taste like I think it should. So we've worked really hard to figure out how to create the right level of sweetness in a drink, but not adding sugar to it. And that's what we've done. And we're hopeful that not only is it, as you said, it's a great tasting product, and there's a range of them, but actually it works on exactly the same premise as One Water does, which is we give away the money that we make.
I love the fact that you defined yourself back in 2012 not so much as a schoolboy entrepreneur, but a schoolboy philanthropist. It's pretty good. It's nice to transition on that basis. You said yourself in terms of coming up with this idea, Global Ethics, of course, is the parent company for One Water. That started off in a local hostelry, talking about, you know, how 1 billion people in the world have to live without clean water. Was there a moment the day after where you thought, we must be insane, we can't do this? And yet, you know, it's managed. I mean, through that whole sort of period, it just sounds like a Hollywood movie just waiting to be produced.
Do you know, the funny thing is that sentiment doesn't ever change. I mean, running a business is tough, and running a business that gives away all its profits every year is really, really tough. But I think back in 2005, there were a lot of people that went, you know, that you can't run a business like this. It's just not possible to do it. But I think what's been proved is that you can do it. It is a challenge, but actually, if you can get the momentum of the public behind you and supporting you, and you can get the support of retailers and stockists you know, in cafes and delis and people like that to support what you're trying to do, then actually you can make these things work. And I think one of the things that I've really loved over the last 10 years that we've been doing this is it's now almost commonplace for any new brand that's coming onto the market to have some kind of social impact attached to it. And I think that, you know, I'm not saying that we're responsible for that, but I think that we were perhaps at the start of this journey, and people have seen what we've been doing, because we know that we get talked about in big corporates, and we see reports that get published, and we always get referenced in it. And I think that kind of sentiment about, actually, you know, if we're bringing something new to market, we should think about how to do that. There was a great example of that actually recently. I don't know if you've come across Paddy's Bathroom, but if you've got kids, Ella's Kitchen is a children's food product, and Paddy's Bathroom is a spin-off from that, and they're giving some of their profits away as well. So, you know, it's fantastic to see these kind of things come to market.
Duncan, I think we're going to have to feature you on a fairly regular basis, but for the moment, Kenna, any final questions at this stage for Duncan?
What are your actual future plans in terms of expanding the brand further?
Well, we're just starting to look at some new products in the what they call the Water Plus category, which is water that has something in it that does you good in some way. So like a vitamin supplement or a nutritional supplement or some kind of health and well-being product. I was just reading a report about how much we now spend on vitamins in this country. And I think there's a real opportunity to help people with some of these kind of choices that they're making. And that's a very interesting and dynamic sector. And because we have a lot of interest in Africa, we're really looking to some of those almost kind of like body shop type, you know, the early sort of body shop years where they were bringing these kind of new things to the market. We're kind of looking at that and going, well, okay, what do some of these super fruits do, and how could we use those, and what are the benefits? So, for example, we know that one of the things that we're looking at is about a 3,000% dose of vitamin C. So, you know, in the wintertime, this is a fantastic product to drink, because it will just boost up your immune system.
So, exactly. None of those coughs and sneezes and lectures is all.
Well, that would be lovely, wouldn't it?
The whole process. And how can people get in touch with you? You obviously mentioned Facebook sites, Twitter, and so on. What's the best way to actually follow up on this and people listening to what we've been talking about and getting involved with the whole process?
If they go to our website, which is onedifference.org, that's got, you know, loads of fantastic content on there, whether it's films that we've made in Africa. There's a brilliant film about how it all began, featuring, it's called Searching for the Kibera Girl. And that is an amazing, slightly tear-jerkery story of how I got involved in it. And the outcome of that, but it's an amazing little film, and you can watch that onedifference.org/Ann, A-N-N. But the website's got loads of content, and you can see how to get involved.
It certainly is a heart-rending aspect. I would have run it for the co-presenter of Midweek Drive-Out today, but the man just burst into tears. I thought we'd just hold back on that, but it's good stuff. Duncan, as ever, an absolute delight. I want to actually commit right at this very moment in time to hopefully looking forward to featuring you on a fairly regular basis, continuing to spread the word. Have you, though, had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive today?
I love talking to you guys. I hope you've got better weather up there than we have today.
It's sunny now. It's sunny now. It's been raining, but sunshine and showers, it works it so well. Round of applause for Duncan Goose, please. And I take it you will return in the near future, Duncan?
I'd be honoured.
Whee! may have heard of, kind of the British Monkees, you could argue. Of course, Paul McCartney, George Harrison, Ringo Starr and John Lennon from the album Revolver. Did you recognise them, Cameron?
Yeah, I did. Maybe one day they'll put a cool little band together.
Yeah, exactly. Time trumpeting, time travelling, etc. Very excited we played some of the latest fantastic stuff from the Monkees, whose album Good Times has made the Billboard Top 40. In fact, actually, Cameron, I think you should make it a little mission in your role as not only a Nashville Access Supremo and MapleStar Music and Media Supremo to get for the Midweek Drive contact with Mike Nesmith, because he's done some cracking country tunes as well.
Yeah, he's just really a music guy. He's all over the place.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever kind of takes fancy.
Anyway, how did the Facebook FaceTime session with Nashville Access go for yourself? Were they delighted and honoured to have connected with your good self?
It was great, yeah. Today was kind of different. We go to this cafe that's just off of Music Row in Nashville, and it's really old school. And we go there and we do some Facebook Live interviews for National Access, and usually it's artists. Today we did something a little different. We interviewed a group called Off the Hook Nashville, and they say the best way to describe it is if you took Whose Line Is It Anyway and did it with music. It's a competition, so there are points, and it's all about writing songs on the spot for subjects that the audience throws out, that the people doing the show throw out. So it was a lot of fun. They actually did a performance. If people want to see, kind of get a taste of it, they can go to facebook.com/Nashville Access, and it's our latest Facebook Live video with Off the Hook Nashville. It was a blast.
Outrageous. And inevitably, we need to ask the question, an hour and 10 minutes later than normal, what's the weather like in Nashville?
It's beautiful today. We had a couple of storms go by over the last couple of days that have taken the humidity right out the air. It's about 84 degrees now. It's just beautiful.
So, pretty much like Skegness, then. Moving on. Not today, at least.
Nothing is like Skegness.
You've heard it there, Catherine. There we are. Cameron, before we go into the musical choice today, would you like to become the next person to formally congratulate our Midweek Drivettes, Kenna and Catherine, for getting a first-class honours degree? Two of them, actually. Two first-class honours degrees from the University of Lincoln. It's now official. They have graduated, almost.
They got those without bribing anybody?
Well, we can't progress any further. Otherwise, we'd have words with John Anderson. Anyway, would you like to share with us what we're about to hear, just ahead of Larry Nemechek? Hopefully Larry will be with us shortly. But what is this magical moment that's going to come across from the man who I thought, what has Cameron decided to actually put together a different sort of John and Van Gelis number? But no, nothing to do with that at all, really. It's a different John Anderson.
Yeah. Back in the 80s, John Anderson was kind of a real breakout artist in country music, had a ton of hits, stayed pretty consistent through the 90s, but like a lot of the older artists, you know, don't have a label deal anymore, so are putting out stuff independently. His album Goldmine that he released last year was on Rolling Stone's list of 40 best country albums of the year. And it's a really great record. The cool thing about this song is that it was written by Merle Haggard. And the story of it is, the song was written about 3 years ago. And Merle Haggard had been in the hospital off and on, he just passed earlier this year, but he'd been in the hospital off and on with pneumonia and ailments like that. And he called John Anderson from his hospital bed. He said, I've been writing this song. But it sounds like something more like you would sing. So John Anderson said, well, finish it and send it on over to me. So Merle Haggard did, and he sent it to John, and it's on the record Goldmine, and this is the latest single. And it's just such a cool song. It's typical John Anderson that you can hear the Merle Haggard voice in there with the lyrics in it. The song is called Magic Mama. Here's John Anderson on Siren FM.
Magic Mama. from Malibu. She had a swanging backyard with an ocean view. She had a little pussy cat and a bulldog too.
Honky-tonk piano as well. But we still need to find out what do the team make of it. So, Kenna, what did you make of Magic Mama?
I loved that. Such a good feel song. Sat here with my toes tapping, swaying. Yeah.
Big smiles on the face. No mention of leaving the European Union. Nothing from that point of view. All good news. And Catherine?
I'm just glad we're not on TV right now because I've been sitting here dancing and it's quite embarrassing, but you know.
Well, the webcam, no, it's not on ground, don't worry. It's all good. Very well done. And, of course, in a few weeks' time, of course, July 20th, we start a programme where we can have a reprise of those plus more with the wonderful Tessa Start, who will be having a listen to that. So well done, Cameron. Excellent stuff. Another top choice.
Thank you.
A top tune. Enjoy the rest of the afternoon. And Catherine will put those last two questions to you. Go, Catherine.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have. It's been fun.
And will you be joining us again very soon?
I'll be back next week.
Isn't it grand? I picked up a pebble on the sand. It knows my hand. I taught the sea. The sea knows what I've done. And it missed the sea toys that I took. It's gonna miss me when I am gone. And it's gonna miss you, cause we are
This is Larry Nemechek, Dr. Trek, and you're listening to the Midweek Drive.
Hurrah! And yes, for the completest amongst you, you might have recognised Melanie singing Pebbles in the Sands there as a kind of way of going back in time and reminding Larry of his time in Scarborough for Sci-Fi Scarborough, a moment seared into the consciousness of the Western Hemisphere. How are you, Larry? Well, hopefully you managed to connect with us because it sounded very, very strange there. We got a kind of almost a strange synthesized Borg-esque version of Larry Nemechek there. Can you actually hear us, Larry?
I can't
can now.
Good.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, that's much better. That's okay. For a moment, I thought he was okay. He was going to become 6 of 9. For a moment, though, I thought he was going to change completely. Larry, last week we ran a mini tribute, and obviously this week we need to acknowledge from your own capacity as Dr. Trek, we lost another. Well, we lost Anton Chekhov from the next from our sort of current scenario with the sad demise of Anton Yelchin.
Right. It's just a strange world, isn't it? I mean, I was talking about how most of the original series cast were worried about, you know, we've lost so many of them. And here is the irony of, it's almost like a parent and child, like they say, a parent should never have to see a child, should never have to bury a child, you know? And here's Walter seeing his younger counterpart in the greater Star Trek family, taken way too soon. In a kid who's known way better for more and more things than playing Chekhov.
Indeed.
Had a great career ahead of him. Yeah. It's just such a strange, yeah, really, really, and right on the eve of promoting the movie, which is kind of.
Yeah. We send positivity through the universe, and hopefully we'll remember from that perspective. But I'm going to actually address that. First of all, would you like to congratulate our two midweek drivettes? We've done it for most of our contributors today because both Kenna Zarebski and Catherine Morton, they never had the opportunity of speaking in person to you because they've been too busy producing first-class honours work. They've graduated. Their news has actually come out. They've got first-class honours degrees in journalism from the University of Lincoln. Would you like to congratulate them, Larry?
Oh, goodness. The world needs all the good journalists it can get.
Yeah.
As we're all watching world events for real by.
Precisely.
So good on you. Congratulations. Yeah,
so well done. And Catherine said that you often, when we mentioned Star Trek, your father force-feeds Star Trek down to you as you were growing up, which is very good.
Yeah, shout out to you, Dad. I did used to watch it with my dad. He does watch it at 6 o'clock most evenings.
Yep, CBS Action, of course.
Yeah, so I walk in and I go, oh, not again. But no, I do like it. I've watched the new movies as well, but I don't know a lot about it. But
in fact, this very moment in time... Okay. If I give a little clue, Larry will be able to identify the episode. He has a most rigorous... No, that's a bad paraphrase. I'll give an even simpler clue. Kirok! Kirok! It can only be which episode, Larry? Kirok!
It can only be... it's Kirok. It's Miramani's planet. I'm trying to think of that.
Yes, it is.
I'm actually on vacation in Oklahoma, Alec, and I'm sitting in a rib crib restaurant, so that's why I'm a little...
That's okay.
Scattered, but I know it's Kirok.
Yes. Yeah. Tahiti syndrome.
The original title was The Pale Face.
Yes.
The Paradise Syndrome.
The Paradise Syndrome, you see. You see, Larry, he scores. That's the official thing. You can drop in a whole system and all over. We also have, as you mentioned, Kenna Zarebski. Kenna, your views on Star Trek?
I'm afraid I haven't got many views on Star Trek. To be totally honest, I've not been a fan of
that's
it.
Okay.
I've watched it, but very little.
Well, that's okay, because I'm. Do you remember, Larry, a writer called James Blish at all?
Oh, of course.
Yes.
I didn't know him, but he did all the novelizations.
He did. Because a little question for you this week. It's the preface to Star Trek VI, which was a letter that apparently was sent to James Blish. I'll give you the gist of it here. And the important part was this letter written to James Blish, published in the whole system. By an interesting coincidence, I happen to be Captain Pierre D.J. Kirk. This being the case, the men of my last command built a rather elaborate organisation within an organisation based on the series Star Trek. My Jeep was slightly altered so that its registration numbers appeared as NCC-1701. Our weapons were referred to as phasers, and our radio communication procedures were patterned after those of the Starfleet. My junior officers picked up the names of the more recognisable regular characters in the series. My executive officer made an excellent Spock in that he physically as well as temperamentally resembled the Vulcan. As you can see, the men of the 363rd Transportation Company US Army went to some lengths to identify with the Star Trek series. Turning to the point of this letter, about 8 months ago, I was in command of an armed convoy en route from Ankei in the Central Highlands to Da Nang on the northern coast. As we proceeded along Route QL No. 1, which the late Bernard Fall referred to as the Street Without Joy, we were engaged by snipers, which usually served as the prelude to an ambush. Deciding to run through the suspected area, I signalled my gun trucks to cover our cargo vehicles, and then via my Jeep radio I announced, "Attention Viet Cong, we are the Federation Starship Enterprise and you are now in deep trouble. Phaser banks, charge your phasers and fire in my order." The comment was directed at my gun trucks to serve to fire them up for what promised to be a tight situation, but to my surprise, the radio exploded into a torrent of frantic jabbering in Vietnamese, and moments later, the sniping ceased, and we continued through without incident. The only thing I can assume is that the Viet Cong were monitoring our broadcast transmissions, had seen the show on television, and thought that we were, in fact, the Enterprise. Under the circumstances, I can readily understand this reluctance to engage us in a fight. Happily, I can report that despite their initial sniper activity, no casualties were suffered by the crew of the Enterprise. Had you heard that tale before, Larry? And is it true that ultimately Gene Roddenberry never took credit for ending the Vietnamese War?
I think so, right. Notice he didn't have to resort to even threatening Clubamite.
Well, of course.
That's a story that Keith Beckett has in her, there's a book called Inside Letters to Star Trek.
Yeah.
And I think that's where that came from. Yeah. Susan Sackett, Gene's assistant, included that. And that was back in the 70s. That book came out in the 70s.
Absolutely, yes. It was
that's a great, great story.
Yeah. Yeah. You see, it just shows when I was dealing with the Vietnamese conflict in my module Origins of Modern Britain, Level 2 for both Kenner and Catherine, they clearly weren't there when I used the cultural context of how Star Trek, Vietnam War, who needs to worry about sort of puppet regimes put in power and the CIA? Honestly, it's a different line entirely. So what's Oklahoma like at present then, Larry? Is the corn as high as the elephant's eye?
It is, because they actually had rain this year, unlike we have in California. So Everything is very green here and humid. So I was just at my old original hometown convention. It's called SoonerCon, and I was just there for 3 days, and it's growing like as tall as the elephant's eye as far as numbers go. And then I spend about 4 or 5 days visiting friends and family before I head back to L.A. So, greetings from Red Dirt Land here.
Well, Cameron Tilbury, our country music correspondent from Nashville, would have been proud today to have been officially your warm-up act. So well done. You know, it's great stuff there. I was almost going to say we'll have another little reprise of You Bring the Summer. We're going over to Los Angeles back with Lily Holliman in a few moments. So we'll obviously sort of make sure you see from Larry to Lily. See what we did there? You know, these are casting director instructions that are essential to the world today. But, of course, I hadn't realised until recently that another classic from the 60s also celebrates 50 years this year. Of course, the Monkees. Larry, were you in any way, shape or form a Monkee fan?
Mm-hmm. I was. My older brother was a huge Monkees fan. He ran the TV, and he wore a Mike Nesmith stocking cap for about a year, and he never took it off. We watched the Monkees all the time.
Well, have you actually heard their latest album? Brand new material in the top 40.
I probably heard a clip from it on the news show that was doing the feature on it, but I haven't heard it.
Well, it is.
Have you streamed it there?
And it's absolutely. So I'm always trying to say it's my album of the year so far. We've featured You Bring the Summer earlier in the production. We're going to actually go up with the other track we selected, which is She Makes Me Laugh, or Laugh, as somebody once said, to get the Davy Jones sort of Mancunian accent sort of through. But it means that Kenner needs to put those last two questions to you towards a fairly shortened version of Larry on tour in Oklahoma, but still nonetheless exciting for all that.
Larry, have you had a reasonably telephonic link with us today?
A reasonably interesting.
Interesting, that's it. Yeah. I knew I missed a word.
Word in there. Are you? It's just the English language. It crosses the Atlantic, could have been lost in translation. Has it been okay for you, Larry?
I have had a boomer sooner time of it with you, as we would say back here with my old college football team. So, no, it's been lovely as always.
Brilliant. And will you be joining us again soon?
I would love to. Hopefully the subspace channels will be a little clearer.
It was a little bit woolly, as I said. I thought, you know, is this a case of have we gone into a different species dimension? Has there been something else that's sort of worked through? But no, a round of applause for Larry Namicek, please. And don't forget, you can actually get the latest edition of Star Trek magazine. It's out there now. A whole heap of other goodies. Larry will return. Here come the Monkees.
I'm so glad that I got her to think of. She's fine as any Valentine. I think about her all the time. Cross my heart and hope to die. She sends me silly letters.
in what we've loosely termed the continued growth and educational development of fabulous actress Lily Holloman, we really should actually ask the question, has she encountered the monkeys? You know, she makes me laugh. Their latest tune we actually heard, the, I don't know, shall we ask her, do you think, Kenna? Lily Holloman, have you encountered the monkeys?
Have I encountered them in my life?
Exactly.
I've only encountered actual monkeys in the rainforests of Costa Rica.
Yeah, you see, that's what we thought you'd say, Lily. And there's a whole TV series, 2 seasons worth, you know, 50 years ago they launched, and it's all very well filled in as guiding you through Star Trek, but culturally you should get hold of the monkeys and Mickey DeLand's.
Oh, well, yes, of course I know the band, but I thought you meant, you know, a literal physical encounter. No, I have not.
Okay. Well,
in case seen them live or met them.
Oh, well,
but I've heard their music. Yes, exactly. I'm very familiar.
Not that he's around. I once actually met Davy Jones on a few occasions, actually, one of which was actually on a train in Cambridge. But so we are. Life continues. He went on to be a jockey.
Ooh.
Yeah. Well, there we are. You once thought of me as a white knight on his steed. Now you know how happy I can be. There we are. Little lyric there, which I'm sure sort of echoes home, because I'm talking about lyrics and singy-songy routines, such as Daydream Believer, and because Lily was also singing recently, and we haven't heard Lily sing ever as yet on the Midweek Drive. This is unprecedentedly, it's just not good at all. Lily, why were you singing, and why were you singing in aid of British actors?
Yes. So when I was... yes, this old chestnut. When I was 17...
Yes.
I was presented with the opportunity to go to the British American Drama Academy, which is actually an American group of students that go and study the Bard with your very skilled, masterful teachers, including very famous people who I got to witness teach, including Ben Kingsley and Alan Rickman and Fiona Shaw. It was incredible. I was way too young to be in England at the age of 17 years old. I got in a little bit of, I got a little wild there, to say the least.
Lily, you were just the same age as Davy Jones was when he was signed up for the Monkees. So, you know, it's still, it's like the equivalent.
Back to the Monkees.
Exactly, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, it was really a life-changing experience. We stayed at Balliol College in Oxford, and the teacher I remember most and who made the biggest impact on me is a theater actress, and I don't know if you've ever heard of her. Her name's Lynn Farley. Have you heard of this actress?
No. But
if you ever get the opportunity to see her in a stage show, she does theater all over England and in London. She is amazing. And one of her warm-ups in class was we would repeat after her this fully embodied, crazy, high-pitched version of the Jabberwocky.
Mm. 'Twas brillig and the slithy toads did gyre and gimble in the slade. Sorry.
Oh, mimsy were the
borogoves
and the mome raths outgrabe.
Do you know, Lily?
Beware that Jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite, the claws that catch. Beware the Jubjub bird and shun the frumious bandersnatch.
Yeah, it's the American accent. I could listen to Lily actually just work her way through the Jabberwocky just, you know, all the time. Because, little secret, Lily, if I ever get round to writing my memoirs, one of these days, my working title is going to be Mimsy Were the Borogoves.
I like it. Well, you would make a very good Mad Hatter, I think.
Do you? Is that more Johnny Depp? Is that kind of just insanity? I mean, you know, we've got... Lily, I've got to invite you to do what most of our contributors have been doing this very day. And we know Emma Tinson has been congratulated by Phil Nearness online for getting her first-class honours degree. Likewise, Claire Margeris, etc. But to relative newbies, defined by Phil last week as part of Special K, Kenna Zarebski and Catherine Morton, also graduated with first class honours. Well, at least they're back to graduate. They've got the results. They've got first class honours in their journalism degrees. Ooh. Would you like to congratulate them, Lily?
Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, moving on, we had a line from Phil which says...
Well, actually, to actually answer your question...
Yes?
Years and years later now, the British American Drama Academy has a scholarship that they give to people who couldn't afford to come and study Shakespeare in Oxford. And I did a cabaret performance in Hollywood to raise money for said scholarship last week.
See, that deserves a round of applause. Yay! It's actually the day after we last connected with Phil Linnis in Los Angeles. And indeed, the official line was, regale the team with stories of your British Academy of Dramatic Arts fundraiser and maybe even stories of your time at BARDA, which, of course, as we just know, is the British American Drama Academy. So, tremendous. And what did you sing, Lily? Because, you know, that it's not always saying you were performing, you were doing cabaret. What were the numbers you were working through?
I did two numbers. I did Adelaide's Lament from Guys and Dolls.
Good.
And I did one for my baby and one more for the road.
Dean Martin would have been proud. Would you like to? I mean, I don't know where you actually are at present. You might be indoors, you might be outdoors. You know, it's California. She could be partying down with Fuzz Aldrin. Who knows? But would you like to just break it? I mean, Kenna, would you like to hear Lily sort of break into a little number here?
I would love to.
Yeah, Catherine, would you say the same thing?
I second that.
Yeah. No pressure, Lily. You know, it's just can we go to the world. Would you like to just
I'll
give
do
us
a little Adelaide Lament.
Please.
Okay. Okay. It says here, the average unmarried female, basically insecure, due to some long frustrations, may react to psychosomatic symptoms, difficult to endure, involving the upper respiratory tract. Dunk, dunk, dunk. In other words, just for waiting around for that plain little band of gold, a person can develop a cold. You can spray it wherever you figure the streptococci like. You can give her a shot for whatever she's got, but it just won't work. If she's tired of getting the fish eye from the hotel clerk, a person can develop a cold.
Oh, round of applause. Right. Yo, whoa. That's, you see, this is, and it's all part of the gradual grand plan to have a musical midweek drive. That's the classical thing for me.
I think so.
We'll follow that up shortly with Kenna Zarebski in the shower, which is another routine.
That will be the only time you'll catch me singing.
Work on with you. Excellent stuff. I don't know if you caught any of the show, because clearly now that you're actually locked into the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, it's sometimes difficult to catch the show live, so to speak. You need to catch up on podcasts or various other factors. But Larry Nemechek was keen to find out, as he's currently in Oklahoma, is California still okay? Is it still standing? Because, you know, clearly I know that the impact of the Brexit results in this side of the Atlantic and European unions, or not as the case may be, might have really carried a kind of trip across to the San Andreas Fault, really. So it's all well in California, or are you saying, no, as long as Donald Trump gets on board, we're happy?
You know, it seems the same to me. I don't know. I mean, Fuzz Aldrin is changing the world one meow at a time.
Nice.
All as well, really.
I think that's actually after the Lady Killers gets its release, etc. Changing the world one meow at a time is probably going to be the next sort of routine. Now, clearly, another shameless plug for Chill Pack Hollywood. This week, has to be said, I hope the chap isn't actually listening, Phil Linnis possibly will be, but the chap who was interviewed, first 5 or 10 minutes, I thought, oh, for goodness sake, sort it out. He kind of didn't quite get Chill Pack Hollywood, I thought. He was an English chap who's got his own new series working through, does a lot of podcasts, a lot of fine podcasty stuff, etc. But you know, Lily, sometimes where you think it's a bit like, you just don't get Monty Python. You just don't get that whole thing. I just didn't feel he quite got the kind of Dean Hagland fiddled in as Rapport somehow. But that's just an observation. Check it out as well if you would. I don't know if you've heard it, if you've got any comments on that, or you think, no, I couldn't possibly comment.
Well, you know, I need to tune in myself. Now I'm curious.
Yeah. It's one of those things, because normally the guests that Phil selects, and having been privileged enough to have been one a good few years ago, admittedly, but you know, it's still very pleasurable, you know, they kind of really hit the ground running. This time I just didn't feel it did somehow. No names, but it's just, Dean was on good form as ever. Phil was on perfect form, but somehow that opening sort of 20 minutes. Maybe Ken will have a listen to it. Anyway, Ken, any questions for Lily Holloman? I mean, Los Angeles Breakfast Club, the joys of NCIS, just and producer and actress, and go for it.
Yeah, out of your busy schedule in your life, what is the most for you personally? What is your favourite part? What do you enjoy doing the most?
I don't really have a favourite part. I've made the commitment to do only really engage in activities that inspire love and joy and expand me and deepen my relationship to life. So everything I do is met with that intention. And so between the Breakfast Club and acting and bringing this movie out into the world, it's all has its own challenges. And you know, if something is presented to me and it scares me a little bit, like that cabaret at BADA, I will accept the invitation or take note of it as something I need to work through, because I consider all of life to be a wonderful, complex dream.
Do you know, it's like that one of those wonderful graduation ceremonies that's there. For a moment, I thought she was going to say, well, clearly, the regular contributions to the Midweek Drive has got to be a highlight. But, I mean, just the way
well,
she...
that's true. But, you know, maybe I should be the Mad Hatter.
I'm sure you could be a Mad Hat-Hat. We could have Mad Hatters and Mad Hat-Hats. Midweek Drive-Hats. Mm-hmm. A number, please, well, Lily, between two...
Speaking of that, though,
yep.
Really quickly...
Yes.
It was discovered somewhere in Europe that there is a marching band that dresses up like the Mad Hatter called the Lady Killers. So I'm just saying, you might want to look it up.
You know, it's that kind of synchronicity that proves that the scriptwriter is getting it right, even though we might think they're getting it wrong. A number between 2 and 26, please, Lily.
25.
Nice, brief, to the point. What does the universe say?
I have a special request to pass on to you directly from the morning sun herself, echoed by the clear blue sky, the earth under your feet, and the trees in your life who each long for your passing. From time to time, however sporadic or brief, they'd absolutely adore your undivided attention. I know I'd want to know, so I thought you would too. The universe. P.S. I know, you can't be everything to every tree, but you come amazingly close.
I know Phil doesn't like the P.S.'s, but at the end of the day, if you've got a tree out there, give it a hug. That's the important thing. Give it a hug.
Hey, the trees long for my death? That's what they said. The trees long for my passing.
Well, you know, it's a cycle of life. We started off this program, Lily, by actually asking the team, do they want to be cremated or buried? You know, we're talking about critics' views. You know, it works our way through that. It just opens up a whole range of things. And yet, like, that's a circle of life. You know, I go, hey, my kind of... No, I'm sorry. best not go there.
Okay, now officially everyone has to sing, because Alex and I have sung, so...
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah, come on, guys.
The message comes out. We're getting raised out. Eyebrows from Catherine, which probably means her agent's going to be on the phone saying, we need to work our way through that. If you're waiting for the sound of film and screen, it's not going to be on this week. Actually, probably on in fortnight's time, because next week we actually serve as a precursor to Andrew David anchoring the latest stage of Siren FM Considers the American Presidential Election Race. But Kenner, would you like to put those last two questions to the lady? You can see just some of the images of with respect to that in terms of Lily Holloman biography, Lily Holloman bikini, Lily Holloman feet. It's amazing what you find on various other bits and pieces there. But the genuine ardour, the Lily Holloman, would you like to put those two questions to her, please?
Yes. Lily, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yeah, now I'm concerned there are bikini shots of me online.
Shit.
Well, you know what I'm going to be doing.
Well, checking out the podcast of the show, obviously, when it goes online, inevitably. Anyway, carry on, Kenna.
And will you be joining us again soon?
I would love to. Thank you. I would be honoured.
That's great. By the way, where is Phil? Is he just at a meeting? Has he left California? Is he in there? What's he doing at this stage, or can you not say?
No, he's in Turlock, California, doing some very important gardening work.
Well, there we are. See, that's the whole message. But he's also started his acting class. It's phenomenal. Lily Whistle, thanks to Anna Lewis for helping to launch the show. Christine Weber, of course, for her latest novel, Who'd Have Thought It? And just being Christine Weber. William Coles, of course, with or without the triangular hat with the D written on it. Duncan Goose, of course, wonderful founder of the One Brand and indeed a way of actually. I'll just give you this little line, Lily. I'm not sure they get it in the States. One juiced water simply through raising £20 million, which is the target of 2020. They've already raised 14 million, changed the lives of over 3 million people. Keep on gulping and we'll keep on giving. Over £14 million raised for water projects. That's the one, juiced water, well worth sort of supporting and accessing across the world. Positive things. Cameron Tilbury as well, Larry Nemechek and Lily Holloman, and you, dear listener. Thank you for being part of the whole sequence. Kenna and Catherine, enjoy the programme?
Yes, very much. Had a great time, thanks.
Marvellous, so we are sort of way through. Back tomorrow morning?
Yes, tomorrow morning.
Just after midnight, Lily, if you're paying attention there. After midnight, we connect with Tessa Snartz, just outside Peterborough, Glinton to be precise. Richard Fitzwilliams will be back with us. We've got Darren Philp, Director of Policy and Market Management on the People's Pension. Ian Lennox will be joining us. Nigel Mitchell will be talking about the importance of snacking. And William Sitwell will probably be sharing some of his gastronomic news and views. We've also got Jane Anderson, editor of the Traveller magazine, and Rob Law, who will be talking about the importance of the right kind of suitcase, the trunkie. I don't know if the trunkie. Lily, in California, do you have the trunkie?
No, trunkie.
We'll find out tomorrow morning, or in California time, you'll find out about the trunkie, probably, unless, of course, you use the internet to sort out various other things, at around about 20 to 2 in the morning, if you're suffering from insomnia, which I'm sure you won't be. ZZ Top and Sleepy Bag take us out. Best from Siren FM. Can we all say bye-bye?
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.